What's good, y'all? It's that time of the year, and we've got bills to pay. So if you enjoy listening to the show, hit the links in the description to support by donating, joining our Patreon, or buying some new merch. If about 10% of you listening right now donate $10 to support the show, we'd have enough to cover an entire year's worth of cost of production. Over the years, I've been very intentional about turning down ads for things that didn't align with our values, so you don't have to listen to us talk about gambling or boner pills or any of that other crap. But that's only possible through the support of you, our listeners. So we've created some new ways for you to support, and again, if you enjoy listening to the show, hit the links in the description to support by donating, joining our Patreon, or buying some of our new merch. And of course, don't forget to tell someone you like their kicks today. You never know how far a compliment will take you, and we all know how good it feels to be on the receiving end of some appreciation. Now let's get into today's show.
Jordan trying to shake off Starks. Oh, what a move! Oh, LeBron James with no regard for human life! 12 seconds.
Bryant for the win! Bang! Iverson! Against Gil, the crowd on its feet. Allen for the win!
Welcome to the Sneaker History Podcast.
What up, what up? Welcome back to the Sneaker History Podcast. My name's Nick, with my guys Rohit and Robbie, to talk about some rocking and copping and some Air Max 95s, since they're all the rage in the sneaker sphere right now. But what's good, fellas? How you guys doing? It's been a minute.
Happy to see you again, big fella. That's all I'm going to say, and you know we're here for you, and I don't know what else needs to be said about that, so I'm just happy.
Thanks, man.
We've got the triad. Next time we'll get Mike, too.
Yep.
It's been a long time. Happy to have you. Happy to be back. Kind of wearing the same hat.
I was going to say, I didn't get the memo.
You get the black hat memo?
Some people tend to be black hats in life. I would not necessarily use that to describe my two gentlemen friends here on the podcast, but you know, sometimes life be lifing.
I don't want to veer off topic right away, but Nick, your brim is always perfect. I finally started doing the steamer with a water bottle and like doing that to mine, and mine's getting close to yours, but instead of just doing it manually and just try to bend it, I finally learned to get the steamer in something round. Is that what you do?
Most of them are still manually done. Just over time. Like, the steamer definitely helps. I've done that a couple of times. I mean, you guys know me. This is a safe space. I'm the laziest motherfucker around, man. Like, I don't clean my shoes. I don't clean my hats. Like, I have enough clothes to last a couple of weeks before I do laundry. It's a horrible experience living in a house with me, and I'm speaking on behalf of my girlfriend right now. But, you know, just as
so was
this.
Nick, what have you been rocking then? Anything on your radar? What's on your?
All right, so I'm gonna start with copping, because the good folks at PF Flyers just sent over these new Bob Cousy joints, which have like some pretty cool details. Like there's a 14.
Oh,
on
I
there.
See it now.
Yeah, Micro. And actually, what's cool about this? I mean, other than the fact that they are still working with Bob Cousy, and he's in his 90s, which is super dope. They actually updated the cushioning, which, you know, like, this is basically, like, the thinness of the front end. But they're, like, super thick on the back side now versus the originals had next to nothing in there. But that was pretty cool, because I've never actually owned a pair of PF Flyers, which sounds crazy for somebody who started a site called Sneaker History. Every time I tried to get a pair, I just missed on my size. So this is like kind of a bucket list shoe for me to have. And they changed it up too. Like, I don't know if you guys can see this, but this is like actually leather. The tongue's leather, the lace eyelet holders, like the lace stay is leather. And then the rest is like kind of that old school canvas. But I don't know. I was pretty excited to just, like, it was a nice distraction. Let's put it at that. But rocking, I pulled these out today. The Air Jordan 20... these were called the East Coast, but they're the Chutney colorway. So this is my favorite detail on this shoe. Like, underneath the little, like, you know, thing for the strap is the MJ signature in there.
And stylized.
Then obviously just the, I mean, these are a little smash, but
okay.
They'll be that good once I get them on feet again. So
they've lived a good life.
Yeah.
The 20,
I'm
right?
I'm more than plenty. The 20, yeah. Lasering, man. Lasering. What a time.
Chutney.
One I wanted to buy a couple years ago, and they retroed, but it's too rich for my for my tooth, the price wise, but gorgeous, yeah. Weird shoe, yep. Gorgeous weird shoe. I've had a pair of PF Flyers. They sent me a pair a couple years ago, and they're great. I'm just a Chucks guy, so it's hard not to. So for me, a couple months ago now, Reebok sent the Aries Instapump Fury collab,
ooh.
And even in this low lighting, they look super badass. I've worn these at least once a week the past month and a half. I wear them to the gym. They're so sleek. My first pair of Instapump Furies. That's also weird for somebody on a sneaker history podcast to just now get a pair. But I'm a fan, man. Like, it kind of has
got some Raiders vibes to it, you know?
It kind of does, but a little bit of lime green on the outsole. Yeah. They're sleek and tough. I wish I had a better way to explaining them, but yeah, this Aries collab. They're really, really cool. Black shirt and black gym shorts. You feel like
murdered out.
Yep. Like a you feel like a murderous ninja, like the bad kind from like the 1600s, 1500s.
The Pump cool. Fury is like, I actually I was in storage and made a video over on YouTube and like was talking about this because I came across, like I have like probably 100 pairs of Pump Furies, like is very close to the question for me. And it takes like a little bit to break in because like when you first get it, the carbon shank is just like super stiff. And like once it feels a little bit more comfortable, it's one of my favorite shoes, but it's specifically because all of them have such good quality. Like the materials on that shoe are better than most of the Reebok shoes almost every time, but it never gets talked about because it's just like, hey, we sell these in Japan and they sell out over there. So America gets like three or four colors and then they kind of forget about it. But that's definitely one of my favorite shoes. And that one
once like
dope.
The OG, like red, yellow, you know, that like the first one comes out, I will be actually getting a pair. I will care this time. I'm converted. And then for my Coppin, the nice people at Adidas, an active athlete, sent me their it kind of got to show you. So very normal on the outside of the box, right? Nothing to see here, folks. See if I can do this around a camera and around a microphone.
So
it's a H-Town commemorative pair. They're kind of doing a little rodeo barbecue thing here. So it celebrates the Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo. So it says H-Town all throughout here. There's barbecue sauce. The paper is super cool. I should have taken the paper out of the box, but I'm not going to do that right now. It takes too long. But within the really cool paper are these really, really cool denim and gum superstars. So on the tongue here, it says everyone's welcome. Like everyone's welcome at the rodeo, the inclusiveness. Again, barbecue sauce themed. On the insole here, we have a little fork and spatula. Little stabber and spatula, whatever. Some cool camo, kind of cowboy boot inspired heel tab, yeehaw. But the denim is super cool. I feel like denim shoes in general tend to be too denim-y. There's too much denim. These having the brown and the shell toe and the kind of like white cowboy like wrangling lace inspired laces here. I mean, rope inspired laces here breaks up the denim a lot better than a lot of other shoes do. But I was hoping Mike would be here to talk about the rodeo. I'm curious if he's ever been, because he's kind of a, you know, a good old Southern boy. I figure he might be into a rodeo or two. You don't know.
Robbie, are there any allusions to Ivy Park or Cowboy Carter? Because that's the vibe I kept getting when you were describing the shoe.
Right. And that's the same alliances too. So I'm surprised not. But no, these are just straight up H-Town, which Beyonce is also from Houston, I believe, too. The super cool. I'm going to take the paper out really quick because it is really cute.
I haven't been to the Houston rodeo, but I don't. Have you guys been to a rodeo before? It's one of the more fun experiences. And I'm by no means like a cowboy, you know, at all.
I think I went when I was really little. But
yeah.
I went when I had a lot of my white friends around. It was nice.
So yeah, we have sausage links. And a space shuttle here, Adidas cowboy hat, the same spatula and fork from the insole, and then a big old smoker, you know, a cow skull, some ribs on the bottom, and a lasso. Like, you don't have to do a lot. something really cool. But yeah,
that is very underrated aspect of sneaker storytelling is, and we've been noticing this a lot recently with a couple of the other releases from this year, the shoe paper, lack of a better term. I don't know if there's ever an official terminology for the paper inside your shoebox, but that's been used a lot. Like I think in the Nigel Sylvester shoes, there's a picture of him. I remember, I think the All-Star packs, ironically, from the Houston series also had a little bit of like a UFO motif. So kudos to the brand for really using every square inch of their packaging to tell the story.
So, I mean, 100% true. I want to go throw some blue jeans on and wear them. I mean, they came out earlier this month. They came out on March 7th, I believe, or around that time. But yeah, they're available now at Active Athlete. Super cool. Go check them out. Active Athlete's actually one of the oldest, like, the sneaker retailers. So go check them out for anything just to support small business or medium business, local, yep. That's the one I want to use. But yeah, really cool. Check them out. Yeehaw.
Okay. I tip my hat to you, sir.
And yeehaw. Now
for my rocking and copping, I guess what I've been rocking this week is, guys, correct me, the Kobe 11 Lows. And was this like an HTM collab? Because I remember three shoes coming out, and this was the Tinker pair because it takes obviously the inspiration from the Black Cement 3, which at the time was one of Kobe's favorite sneakers, but I think wasn't there a El Capitan colorway, and I'm trying to remember what the third one was, but very underrated shoe. If they ever want to do a retro of this shoe, I would not mind because it is iconic in the Black Cement colorway, and so certain colorways just don't miss. And then speaking of not missing, and an implicit allusion to the Jordan brand, I also got my hand on a pair of Nick Engvall ones. That's right, I'm calling them the Nick Engvall ones, not the band ones. So, yeah, thank you to Jordan Brand for hooking a brother up as he was parking to get to his next meeting.
Nice, man.
I believe those
nice.
Are called the Warrior Kobe 11 Elite Lows. My computer froze. I tried to Google Kobe 11 Elite Low.
I'll go ahead and look them up while you guys glamp some more, and maybe I can come back around at the end of the episode and put people on game.
Because, yeah, admittedly, there's a blue one.
The 11-12 era of Kobe's was like, I just cannot remember any of those names, which is odd because like I could tell you like what the Carpe Diem 4s were, but I couldn't tell you what the newer.
I mean, so Rohit, I'm happy you have that shoe. I think I had like three pairs of the 11 low EMs. They're so tight. Like I don't like the way they feel.
So I sized up because that particular era of Kobe, to your point, Robbie, was so narrow. And I was just like, I don't want to get a foot eating disorder, but I feel like I have to because I always use the analogy of the corset on your foot. And that's very much how we felt during that time and era. So I'm kind of glad that the new Kobes feel a little bit more loose in the front, if you get my drift.
Only ones I still have are like the Mamba Moment engineered mesh, like Nike ID pair. I had the Bruce Lee ones. I had the Black History Month and a Marion Aces. Anywho, not important. We're talking Air Max 95s, which kind of has some through lines and colorways with the Kobes. If you think about it, Nike likes to use a lot of the same motifs over and over again positively. If it works, it works. But yeah, we're mostly talking about the 95. First question, who likes the Air Max 95? You guys fans?
America.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. America, Japan. Not to go back to that same
Stankonia
theme, but
planning on dropping some bombs over Baghdad, Japan sending PlayStations.
I think the 95 is probably the most comfortable of the originals. Like I like the fit and feel of it better than probably the 90 and the 97s. Like I mean, like the mainstream like history of air kind of shoes. It's probably the top for me.
The 97 is very narrow. It's very banana-like. Yeah. So the 95 does have that more rounded shape. And not having, in my opinion, not having the full-length airbag and having like the two regions of air makes it more comfortable too, a little bit more flexible. Like, I'll give a little lesson if people don't already know. I'll grab a pair right here. So when Sergio Lozano was designing this, he had the human anatomy in mind. And I was just talking about how I find the two area setup more comfortable. This was the first time there had been Air Max in the 4 foot like this. And these dots here, or this region here in the outsole, is supposed to represent like the human spine. So this is just way more flexible than a lot of other Air Maxes, which also makes it more comfortable. You have, you know, the human skin, like, and the dermis levels inspiration of the outsole and the upper. What else, right? The backbone, the spine, I guess the ribs, right? This nylon mesh and stuff kind of going over the front of the foot, supposed to be like the ribs, the lacing structure. Like the era, a lot of face fast lacing setups, these have them too. Attached tongue, that's it, it works, right? Yeah. I mean, that setup, I don't want to go too crazy, but I mean, this setup, just when something works, it just works, right? Like, there's a lot of discussion now about the Air Max 95 having a resurgence in 2025, but all of us have been around long enough, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners have been around long enough too. The Air Max 95 has been like an essential staple in the Nike catalog at least since 2000. I mean, there's been GRs of Air Max 95s pumped out, especially around from like 2007 to like 2018, that like decade. You can find all whites, all blacks, meshes, right? Different takes on them.
Green.
Any kind of remix.
Yeah.
You could think of.
I think the retros too, like that. It's one of the shoes that they almost really never stopped producing it, because there were 95s made in like 99 and 2000, you know, like that's just a few years off from the original release. It was much different than, you know, like the Air Max 1 kind of, you know, they made the hybrid 90s a couple years afterwards, but then like it wasn't like a staple. But I think that speaks to the popularity of it too, right? Like there was just, on the one hand, like it just sold really well. Like it was, you know, kind of a cultural shoe in Japan, like I said, where like almost like we mentioned the Pump Fury earlier, where, you know, like original colorways just sold out, and those shoes resold over there before, you know, the mainstream of sneaker reselling even existed. So I think the other thing that like comes to mind for me is like just the color palette that you can attach to it, right? Like I figure I'd break these out. We're going to talk a little bit about the complex list, but these are the Soul Collector Air Max 95s. This is like one of the, you know, collabs that they did back in the day. Like I forget what they called that, like maybe buffalo print or something, where it's like kind of elephant but not. But the crazy part about that is like they didn't, so Complex didn't put this one on the list, and I'm somewhat butthurt about it, but I won't get into that. I just think, like, if you look at this color, you know, like, obviously you can do whatever color you want on all these panels. Like, you don't get all those options on, like, Nike ID or Nike by You now, but for a while there were so many versions that were out available, and then you could do also, like, I think in, like, 2004 or 5, I did, like, a black, like, essentially like a black and infrared 95, because I love the, you know, infrared 90 and infrared colors are just one of my favorites. But like I alternated the stripes on there because of the Nike ID options back in the day. But yeah, like it just lends itself to like so much creativity when it comes to the colors, I think better than, you know, most shoes. 'Cause like if you do the same kind of thing, like on the 97 we were talking about, it just doesn't pop in the same way, you know, like it doesn't have that like wow factor to it, you know. And you could imagine like a shoe like this that's, you know, they've done GS colorways inspired off of this one now, but like imagine seeing this shoe, you know, in the tunnel of an NBA game, or, you know, on the street, you know, of a marathon or something, because people were running in them when they first came out. So I think it's a pretty statement shoe for Nike, in my opinion.
Now, if I can use that as a jumping off point, it's funny you guys mentioned the fact that it's such a ubiquitous shoe, because one thing I feel, especially comparing it to the other quote-unquote pillars of Nike's modern footwear resale retro identity, the Dunk and the Jordan 1, I don't feel that there's the same amount of sneaker fatigue associated with this silhouette the way it is with the Dunk and the Jordan. Could you guys maybe talk on why that might be?
For me, I'm happy you brought up both the Dunk and the Jordan 1. Because those two shoes, much like the 95, and really, you know, the question, a lot of shoes, do the same kind of little tweaks to color palette switches. Think, you know, the bread toe, the grape Jordan 5 versus like the infrared Jordan 5. Just, you change the color palettes. And for me, the 95 here, you can do the Comet Red, you can do the grape, you can do the orange, you can do solar red, you can do this Volt. You can do is swap out one piece of this puzzle, and for me, it still works every single time. You can fundamentally do the same thing and have it not get stale in the same way. I don't think the Jordan 1 can. Like, I guess the design is just so simple and classic that if I see like the Orc Yellow or Chicago, where it's the exact same blocking, just yellow instead of red, you know, insert shoe X, whatever I'm talking about, just doesn't work as well as changing one color of a 95 and having it still just pop. I mean, for lack of a better term, the Volt pops, but I think about the grapes, the Comet Reds, and the oranges particularly, like, they're all different and they don't miss. I know they're not like this, or I mean, the 95s are, the grapes are original colorway, but, and the Comet Reds are too. Anywho, but what I'm getting to is, like, none of them feel less than this Volt colorway, even though they're not the Volts. And this, and not the same way, like, an Orc Yellow is not a Chicago Jordan 1 and never will be. But, like, the 95s can kind of still interplay with each other on, like, the top end of sneaker greatness. That make any sense? It's kind of a weird way to
I think it. I think it's, you know, like, there's, like, the mainstreamification of, like, the Jordan 1 and the Dunk, which, as sneakerheads, even though, like, we all love those shoes, you still want to wear something unique, you know, like for instance, you know, the band ones, like getting that pair. I haven't even worn them yet because I'm seeing people wearing them right now. So I'm like, I'm not, I'll sit on it for a little while before, like, it gets, like, really, it's almost like it gets to the point where, like, I have to wear them. And I feel like with, you know, the shoes that you see everywhere, you know, I guess the blessing and the curse of the 95 is that it's always been one of the more expensive Air Max shoes, even on the retro form. And so, like I typically am not paying full price for a 95 as much as I love the shoe. I mean, I would rarely pay. I did pay. So also in the video that I put on YouTube recently, I pulled out, like, the JD Sports, like, reverse Volts that they did a few years back that are basically, mm-hmm. like, if you took the neons that Robbie's holding up and you took the Ueno Mitas that were essentially a flipped version of that with black eyelets and combined them, like, JD did an in-between version that was really beautiful and the materials were great and everything. I think I got a couple of pairs of them even because I was just like, okay, this is a shoe I'm going to wear regardless. And it's, I think the beauty in it is that it's slightly different than, you know, like, the others, but, like, it's still a color that people will recognize and be like, oh, that's a cool colorway. Where I don't think people are looking at, you know, like a bread toe or, you know, some of the variations of the band Jordan 1 that have come out, the mids, I forget which one came out a few years back that was like, you know, a slightly different shade of red, but it was, like, clearly a band, you know, colorway. And those shoes are beautiful, but I think they're not intended for, like, the diehard sneakerhead, or not the diehard. They're just not intended for sneakerheads. They're going to be for the diehard collectors who have to have every pair of a particular model or color of a particular shoe that they love. But they're really for the person that's not going to sit on Sneakers app waiting for a release, that's not going to enter into a drawing, that's not going to be on top of the news to buy shoes. It's for the people that are going to casually walk into a mall store or a Nike outlet or a, you know, Nike store and be like, oh, I love the Bulls colorways, so I'm going to get that. And what I think is cool about the 95, and I think, what, to Robbie's point, like, you didn't really have that with a 95. You didn't have, like, oh, like, I'm just going to go buy, you know, a bread colorway of the 95 because I like the Bulls. Like, it still lived kind of in its own space of, like more collector driven and more, like, sneakerhead enthusiast type buyers, even though it has all the, like, you know, all the perfect parts, let's say, to become one of those shoes like the Dunk or the Jordan 1, where, you know, you could you could produce tons of them. This is, there's no doubt in my mind, and I think you guys would agree, but like there's nobody that has worn a 95 that's going to say that it's more comfortable than a pair or less comfortable than a pair of Dunks or Jordan 1s. Like, it's just the technology advanced so far. And to Robbie's point about the cushioning, you know, like I think about that a lot. We've talked about it a few different times, but like the full length Air just doesn't make sense to me. It's don't get me wrong. It is mad comfortable cush. Like if you're just chilling, an Air Max 2013, when they first rolled out like the full bags, you know, like not the 2006 versions that they did, because those 2006 Air Maxes, you know, had bubble issues. But once they got to the point, yeah,
the 360.
No, 360s, yeah. 360, yeah. Once they got to the point where, you know, you had like a, you know, I think of like the LeBron 7, right? That cushioning was just like fat and cush. And like, if you're just wearing a shoe casually and you're just going to the mall or going to a show or something, going to dinner, perfect. Super retiree cushioning. That's all you really want, right? Like, this shoe is more like, okay, like they were holding on to something that was a little bit more performance oriented. And I think that separation, to Robbie's point about the, you know, like your foot doesn't sit on the ground in the middle. So if you're standing on a piece of Air, you're pushing that into your midfoot or out in other directions. And it just doesn't seem like it's comfortable, but I don't think that it is as natural as this shoe is, if that makes sense. I was a long rant, but I'll stop there for a minute.
No, but like in 30 years, this setup, it's not a performance shoe. I wonder how it would feel running in it. That's a different conversation. But like in 30 years, anniversary of this shoe, it ain't broke. Don't fix it. And they've tried for, and I don't mind, you know, Flywire or mesh versions or hybrids or fusions. As long as every couple years they give us the OG, I think 2010, 15, 20, and now 20. So every like 5 years or so, we pretty much get an OG Air Max 95. And even to my own point earlier about how like the other ones don't have a drop off, they definitely do, even though they don't in my brain, because these have a whole sneakers release for the big bubble coming out on April 4th. But, you know, Grapes, Comets, all these other like really good colorways, they tend just to show up on the Nike app. And then it's kind of just like quietly go back away. There's not a lot of fanfare. And I'm not mad at that. I mean, my only thing I've ever been mad at about the 95 is, to Nick's point, the price point. You can go on right now and just go to Nike.com and filter Air Maxes by most expensive to lease. You're going to have like the brand new stuff and then the 97, 95, like right underneath it, like the price point. So it's either like Vapor, you know, top like really new stuff. These are probably still more expensive than like the DN or even what are those new ones that look like they have peas on the bottom? Little pea pods on the
DN8.
Bottom.
The DN8.
The DN8. Like those are definitely cheaper than a shoe from 1995. And those are from 2025. Right? I mean, it's just like.
Yeah. The price point is a really interesting talking point around the 95, right? Because, you know, it's almost like the shoe kind of pushed itself into like Jordan competition from a price point perspective, you know? And I think that that is good and bad, right? Like the people that collected, you know, 95s through the years, like, you know, there was a lot of great colorways. Like I graduated high school in 97 and there was a neon orange 97 or sorry, a neon orange 95 that came out that year. And I remember it because, like, obviously, like, the OG Neon is amazing. It's, like, I think, you know, it's on my top 10 perfect shoes list. Like, would not change a thing. That is, like, everything you want in a sneaker from the hype and all the things we're talking about all around. But, like, for me, orange has always been my favorite color, obviously. And then when that came out, it was like, oh, shit. Like, they're going to take this shoe and, like, really, like turn it into something bigger, which is, you know, like it was different than everything at that time that you were experiencing, because at the same time in 95 and 96, you're like, oh, I love the Jordan 10, the Jordan 11, the Jordan 12, but those are completely different shoes. This was like, hey, we got to imagine if Jordan was like, the 12 is killing it. Let's just keep making more crazy colorways of it. Like, that's what happened with the 95, which I think like almost created like a subculture of it. Right. You know, like you have like, you know, my friend Aaron, who's been on the, you know, the Exhaust Notes podcast, is in the Discord with us. You know, he's a huge 95 fan, has a pretty good collection of them and has a ton of knowledge on those shoes. Part of the Team AM fam from Nike Talk, all of those like super like sub cultures of sneaker culture really latched on to the 95 for, you know, good reason, in my opinion, which is maybe what also keeps it in a much different place than the Dunks and Jordans, like you were asking about, Rohit.
I mean, that's the other thing, because kind of as a relative noob compared to the bona fides of YouTube, I always thought that for as eye-catching of a shoe as the 95 was, it didn't hit that hallowed ground. But in a way, I think that kind of boosts its appeal more, because there are those certain sacred cows that if you go into a podcast and say, hey, the Jordan 1 sucks or the Dunk 1 sucks, you're automatically considered a troll farmer. But I've never heard that anti-Air Max 95 sentiment. And it's just one of those things that seemingly, to the point that you guys were making about its design and its structure, vaults itself into that timeless collection. Because when you realize and you do the, whatchamacallit, the research around the anatomy inspiration behind it, it's a shoe that's really well put together, and it ties everything together really well, almost shades of the Big Lebowski. So that's one of those things that I've always appreciated it. I've never been an Air Max guy per se, but it's one of those ones where it's like, and as we kind of go through that list of Complex's top 10 Air Max 95s, you can see why this is such a critically acclaimed and commercially favored shoe.
Man, so all that's right. I didn't get into Air Maxes until the 95. I was in Jordans, Dunks. Funny how that kind of just ends up being Nike's holy trinity, right? Dunks, Jordan 1s, and the Air Maxes. But to all our conversation here, this is getting like a big, wide release. I can buy an Air Max Plus OG and like the Persian Violet colorway right now on Nike.com, and there's no nothing about it, which I wish I didn't know those were sitting on my size, because they're I had to sell my last pair because they were too small. I love that shoe. But yeah, it's just it's interesting. I was totally wrong. The DN8 is 190. So those are actually priced a lot higher than I thought, and right on in line with the 95. To kind of close this thought, the 95 and 97, I would say, are always like, there has to be a heritage model, right? In like a line or a sector of footwear. So these are the two heritage. I mean, I get the one is great. That's probably talking myself into a corner in a second here. The Air Max 1 probably is in there too, in the 90 also. But like, they aren't as expensive. They're not like, they're flagship shoes, but they're not priced aspirationally, or, you know, top of the line pricing. Like the 97 and 95 always will and always have been just.
But Robbie, maybe that's to your point, right? Because if we compare the price point of a Jordan 1 and a Dunk, those are famously cheap shoes, at least in their history. The Air Max 95 has almost been that upper echelon or that upper pinnacle of shoe from a price point perspective. Maybe that's part of the reason why it's considered still more of a luxury and not a ubiquitous shoe. To Nick's point about, hey man, you can go to any mall in America right now, you will probably see at least 5 to 10 people wearing some sort of hybrid or some sort of Jordan 1 or Dunk. And there is also kind of an overlap between those two silhouettes, whereas if there is an overarching theme of this episode, is the 95 is the 95. There's nothing like it. There's nothing, never been anything like it since it's happened, no matter how many tasteful promotional materials Nike comes up with to kind of show the lineage and the history behind the Air Max's evolution. It is a shoe that stands very much on its own, and it continues to have a very unique legacy.
Yeah, I got to warn listeners, this episode may cause you to start looking at Air Maxes online, because I'm totally listening to this conversation, but I'm also very distracted by all the bright colors. Because like Nick was saying earlier, like not just the Air Max line, but particularly the 95, like no other shoe in the series, you can just really do anything with it. And I mean, some shoes don't look great when you go balls to the wall with color. It's like hit all of the hues of the rainbow, but you can go like the Olympic from 2004 Air Max 95 has the Olympic ring colors that looks fruity. It's not fruity in a negative way, but like Fruit Loopy, but like too much color going on. And like the Olympic, like the Miro Jordan 7, right? That also has an Olympic multicolor thing going on. Am I wrong? I think they had the Miros were Olympics, right?
Yep.
Like yeah, Olympic colorway so. Themed. So like those look weird, look out of place. The 95, you can go all black on. Like, you're literally holding a great example. You could put multi-color on one side and all black on the other, and it still looks good. You can do animal print. It still looks good. Like, the Comme des Garçons one, I don't like the tear. They've done a couple different, like, jagged lines on the upper where it's not a like a perfect separation of each color, and that's fine. They've done like hyperfuse, remember those, where it's kind of just like one panel and the colors kind of just like gradually change across the upper. That's super cool. The Juventus from 2003, Rowett knows soccer better than I can, but white, black, and yellow never goes out of style. And
not
that,
at all.
The way that's color blocked is flawless, especially when you compare it to the other black and white shoes or black, white, and yellow shoes that look like not good. I don't want to talk bad about other shoes, but
no,
like,
and this is where I will use this opportunity to save you from yourself, Robbie. The Juventus shoe breaks my heart because right now they're an Adidas team, and I don't think we're going to get a retro anytime soon, because if corporate allegiances stay corporate allegiances, that's going to be one of those ones that's going to be in the vault, and its reputation is only going to get more and more substantial. Because to my co-host's point, flawless color blocking, flawless execution. At that point, that team was the pinnacle of European soccer. And I think if I could have an ear of Nike soccer, please do more shoes like that, because we need these snapshots of certain moments in time commemorating those dominant teams. And because we are the Sneaker History Podcast, what better way to commemorate that than giving each historic Pantheon level team their own sneaker towards an iconic silhouette?
Snapshots in time, right? 1995. The Charlotte Hornets are coming into the NBA. That purple or navy and aqua, you know what I'm talking about, the Charlotte Hornets colorway.
Yep, taking the starter over the jacket.
World. Yeah, taking over the world. And then you have things like the Slate Air Max 95 that same year and the Grape. So they both release, drop colorways. And they're just so like encapsulating of that time. That colorway was everywhere. Everything wanted to have that color blocking. Everything wanted to have pinstripes. These aren't pinstripes, but when you kind of look at it, the stripes are kind of just horizontal pinstripes. It's a timeless shoe while also perfectly hinting at the time it came at. I think every, not to go off on a huge tangent here, but doesn't every design want to be like timeless, right? Isn't that like the goal of great design, is to live on forever? Like, this looks just as good on Jerry Seinfeld's foot in 1997, 2 years after it released, than it does on him wearing it on a pair of like Kicks and Coffee, I mean Cars and Coffee, whatever show he does now. But yeah, like, they don't ever look out of place. The Hyperflight, don't get me wrong, very futuristic shoe. They were looking forward on that puppy. Didn't quite land that landing. Didn't quite stick the landing 20 years later. 30 years later, bullseye. It's like,
yeah. I think too, like the other thing, like, you know, we're, if we get, this might be too in the weeds for some people, but some people will appreciate a little bit of an offshoot here. Like, there are so many variations of the 95. You know, they got a little experimental. So there was like the 95 SC. There was actually a 95 with a zipper. They called it the Z or the 95 zipper that zipped up the middle. And then they also did like the like calf high or knee high women's neon 95s. And like, to Robbie's point, like, and the reason why I say that the original colorway is like the perfect shoe is because once you get too far out of that like perfection, like, it's beautiful to see the experimentation, but like, we don't ever need to see retros of certain things like that. Like, yes, some people on the internet will say, hey, we need to bring back the original 95 zippers from 2000 or 2001, whatever that was. But like, that's not an important shoe, right? Like, it's important that the experimentation happened, but the important shoe is the 95 in its original form, because that's what gave the platform to have those experimentations even happen. To Robbie's point about, like, you know, go down that flight rabbit hole, right? Like, all the Hyperflights and Ultraflights and, you know, like, all of those shoes, we all love them. We all have this like crazy nostalgia driven obsession with a lot of that early 2000s stuff. But like, they didn't spin off enough experimentation because they were the experimentation. You know, like, you had so many shoes that were like, okay, we're going to use, you know, various forms of foam. We're going to swap the Zoom for Air. We're going to mix and match the Zoom and Air cushioning. And, like, it's great. But it's not a, like, easily wearable shoe because, like, it was kind of more niche at the time that they were doing that, which I think comes back to this, the conversation of, like, how great the shoe is. And to the talking points that we kind of are looking at with Complex and everybody else, you know, buzzing about the 95s again, it's been a while since it got like some proper buzz about it, if that makes sense. You know, like, we all pay attention to it. We can go through and say, yeah, you know, like, the Neon 95s have released like 10 times since they came out. You know, like, it's not like a rare thing. But once it goes away for a little bit, and once you get the right, you know, okay, people are looking away from the mainstream Dunks and Jordan 1s and looking for other things that are still familiar, even if they don't really realize how long those shoes have been around. That's also what, to me, makes it like the perfect storytelling opportunity. You know, to Rowett's point about, you know, the Reeboks that you had, the one of the things that I remember the most about the 95, other than the you remember the little foam attachments for the arch support in the 95s? Yep. Other than that, the original 95 box was like beautiful because it was the same theme, the same color theme as the shoe, and you were like, wait, this is like next level of connecting this. Like, if you like that gradient gray, black, and neon or Volt, like, this is it, man. Buy it and put it on the wall. You know, like, that's the box you want to keep, kind of thing. Which, you know, to think of that happening in 1995, you know, it's kind of like the light turned on at Nike with the packaging at that same time, right? Like, you had the retros from 94 that did the, like, mm-hmm. storyline for Jordan brand, but like, it spread to other, you know, genres across campus, and I think that's like something that probably the 95 should get credit for.
I mean, even a more modern example, right? I was at the Nike employee store recently with my daughter, 3 years old, and there was a big display of Dornbecker's, and this year in particular the Dornbecker's had very elaborate packaging that had almost a section for each individual shoe. And then there were the little periscope holes, as we like to call them. And she would look through every single box that was at her eye level. And then, to your point, Nick, if there are touches within the box's packaging that allude to the shoe, it's a visual cue for her. And she's 3 years old. And it's one of those things that if you guys have been around Nick, I know you're a great uncle, as is Robbie. When you see your nieces and nephews kind of have that aha moment of the shoe is blue and so is the box. Yeah. What? Yeah. It's that. And like, that's the sort of thing that is such a quote unquote easy win. I'm surprised we don't see it more often. But then I guess I can't have my cake and eat it too, because then if every shoe had that, it would not mean as much. So yeah, there's a sweet science involved with it.
Slippery, slippery slope. I mean, the Cortez Air Max 95 got some like popularity around the shoe, but those are still limited and hard to get. I mean, just a shoe like the Neon 95 should get the same fanfare as, you know, the Infrared 90 or the Varsity Red or Royal Air Max 1, right? So, duly deserved. The Big Bubble, even as I look at them, I don't care about a Big Bubble. I care about there being remixes, which is fine, but I care that if I buy an OG, air quoting, 95 Neon, like, I want it to look like it. So whether the PSI and the heel looks exactly the same or the bubble shape, I couldn't care less. If the breads that Rowett has have a Jumpman on the back heel, I don't care all that much. They look good. They look good.
So I'm almost there with you, but I will say that there's an era of 95s where I feel like we got shortchanged as consumers, because if you look at like this bubble, right? Let me see if I can get that. This bubble sticking out to me was like part of the cool factor of the 95s. You know, like it really was like, whoa, there's a wow factor to it. And that even in the last like 2-3 years, like the reverse neons that I was talking about, that I'll put some pictures up in here for those watching on YouTube. Those bubbles were definitely lacking, you know, and you kind of see it with like the rest of the Air Max stuff. So like, I think there's like added excitement around this release too, because they're kind of going back to a place where that visual aesthetic of the shoe actually has a more nostalgic feel than just like colors thrown onto the modern version of it. You know, it's like whether it's the band ones or, you know, like the Air Max 180s that they came out with recently, you know, where it's like, oh, this is the full bubble that like I remember as a kid trying to draw with my brother. And like, you know, that is like something that it's tangible for me. Like, so with the 95s, like, although like I'm 100% with you on most of this stuff, I also don't have a pair of neon 95s right now. So like that is like why I'm drawn to this release again in a way that I haven't been in years, because it's like, okay, cool. I you know, like gave a pair away, sold a pair, and I think I traded a pair for as a part of like a bigger trade like 10 years ago. So it's like I've had them, but now it's like, oh, well, if I'm going to have one that I'm going to keep and wear all the time, maybe this is it, which kind of speaks to the collectible aspect of sneakers for us. Like we've kind of gone away, you know, like Robbie and I were talking before we started, you know, we're like downsizing, right? Like most people are downsizing their collections because look, I can't wear this shoe anymore. Like it's just got to sit on the wall. And honestly, like I don't necessarily need a full wall of shoes, you know, to stare at. I mean, I love it, but I also have storage units that I need to like go through and deal with, you know? So it's like, it's problematic in a lot of ways, but I think it's also kind of like, hey, if you're going to do that, here's like a good OG colorway that you're going to, that's going to be in like the, you know, ideally the best shape that they've made. And now it's like one final hurrah. I don't know if that's good for Nike's stock price down the road, but I do think that it's an interesting kind of place where a lot of people are at with the sneaker, you know, industry.
True.
Yep.
I think that's a good place to end. Good reminder out to people.
Cool. All right, y'all. Well, if you're not in the Discord, I don't know what you're doing, but that's pretty much where I hang out all the time. And these guys are in there as well. And we're going to get back to doing some fun stuff. Also, I think I might need to just see if I can hop on with Mike and talk about this trivia night that he had, because the pictures had me feeling a little bit of FOMO. So look kind of fun.
Looking epic.
But,
good
yeah,
turnout.
Exactly. But we appreciate y'all. If you haven't left us a review, please do so. And thanks for listening. We'll catch you on the next one.
Thanks everybody.
Hey y'all, Nick here. One more thing before you take off. Do us a solid and leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform. Check the links in the description to help us keep the show going. And as always, we appreciate you listening. And don't forget to tell someone you like their kicks today. You never know how far a compliment will take you. And we all know how good it feels to be on the receiving end of some appreciation. Peace.